Okay, my name is Steve LaCroix. I'm a paramedic respiratory therapist from the city of St. Petersburg. And one of the things that I do on a semi-regular basis is work as an expert witness involving EMS litigation having to do with paramedics and EMTs. Recently, there was a lawsuit that occurred in Florida, particularly in Volusia County, that involved a small child, or actually the woman being pregnant, delivering a small child, that caused a lawsuit. A major dollar amount was awarded to the family, of up to $10 million. After this verdict came out, there were quite a number of blogs out on the national level. GEMS had one that talked about this case, and a lot of people weighed in on this, and it appeared to me that a lot of them didn't have the facts or the information that they were voicing an opinion on. So I felt it was important to get the information and the facts and that people could learn from and maybe not make some of the mistakes. Now, first of all, this is not intended to point fingers at any particular people. I believe the medics that were involved are by all accounts, excellent medics. And it's not anything to point fingers at a particular ambulance company, because everything that I've read, and we're talking about EVOC Ambulance, is an outstanding company and does a good job. But on this particular case, there were some issues. So I wanted to get the facts out there so that people could maybe change protocols, make some training, and not to repeat what happened. On the night in question, a woman arrived at a small hospital called Burt Fish. Burt Fish is, most of you may recognize, this small community hospital where they've got one doctor, two nurses. They don't have any pediatric care. They don't have any OB care. They don't have any neonatal care. It's just a small community hospital. A woman walks in. She's 26 weeks pregnant with her first child. She's having abdominal pain. She's had a bloody show, and she's leaking some fluids. The doctor, recognizing that this wasn't something that Burt Fish can handle, was attempting to make a transfer to Halifax Hospital in Daytona Beach, Florida, which refused the transfer. And they eventually made an agreement with Arnold Palmer Hospital, which does have the correct facility and equipment and resources to manage a child or a patient of that size. So the ambulance crew was summoned. They got to Burt Fish. The patient was only examined one time. Within about 55 minutes from the time she walked in, the ambulance from EVOC Ambulance started the transport down the interstate, which was going to be about an hour and 15-minute transfer. Now, in the state of Florida, a standard ALS ambulance does not carry any neonatal equipment. They don't have a warmer. The crew consisted of a paramedic, an EMT, and a paramedic student. The paramedic did not do an assessment of their own. They just took the word of the doctor that the patient would be fine and would be able to make the hour and 15-minute transfer. What the crew didn't know is the doctor, when he made his conversation with Arnold Palmer, commented that he was concerned about a precipitous delivery, which means, as most people know, that could come on at any time, even though he was approving an hour and 15-minute transfer down the interstate. Well, luck have it, 13 minutes out on the highway, mom's water breaks. The medic makes an examination, and there's a little bitty foot extending out of the vagina. Now, the baby ends up being delivered in the back of the ambulance, weighed 1.7 pounds. The crew did not have a bag valve mask for the right size. They don't carry the right size ET tube or a laryngoscope or a warmer, are not standard equipment on an ALS ambulance in the state of Florida. So they had this child who wasn't breathing, was mottled, cyanotic, very cold in temperature without the proper equipment. The medic directs the EMT to pull off the interstate. They call the original hospital, Burt Fish, for direction, and the doctor said to continue on. Now, what I failed to mention, both the ER and the medic had both given morphine sulfate for pain, which, as we all know, can be a respiratory depressant in the newborn. So we have a patient that's going to have a respiratory problem just because of the age of gestation, and now we've given something that also depresses respirations, and the crew doesn't carry the equipment to treat that problem. They pull off the interstate trying to find a fire station, try to get more help, try to get another paramedic or another crew to help. They get lost. So they drive around and eventually come across another small hospital who resuscitates the child. They called in a neonatal team from Arnold Palmer, flew in, resuscitated. The child had a body temperature after a half hour in a warmer of about 80 degrees. Had major sugar problems because, as most people, medics would know, is that the only way these children keep warm is by burning up their glycogen stores and stuff like that, that they don't shiver. So we had a patient that was cold, that inability to breathe, and a crew that didn't have the capabilities to treat the problem. The question that came out in trial, do paramedics take it with blind faith and take the direction from a doctor to regardless of what's going on, and just make the transfer? Do they have that choice? And in trial, it was determined that, yes, they did. They have the right to refuse it. The medics had the opportunity to call their own medical director, their own supervisor, which they didn't. They took it on blind faith. And the worst-case scenario, which most medics are taught is to consider worst-case scenario, is to what would happen. Well, in this case, that was the worst-case scenario. We had a delivery of a 1-pound, 7-ounce baby with no equipment out in the middle of the interstate after getting lost. Now, Addison is resuscitated. He's still alive. As of the trial, he was 6 years old. He has a severe form of cerebral palsy. And when we went to trial, as most experts or attorneys will tell you, when you can wheel the victim in a wheelchair and they're 6 years old, cerebral palsy is extremely damaging evidence for the defense. In fact, he can talk. In fact, when he came into the courtroom, he bumped his head on the table and he paused for a second and said, "That's embarrassing," which kind of got the judge and the jury to laugh. And it was fairly obvious that he had connected with at least the two women on the jury, which, believe it or not, had premature children who were fine. How they got on the jury was kind of an interesting story in itself, is that the other side had already used all their objections during the selection of the jury and could not eliminate them women from the jury pool. So bad luck on the side of the defense. The other interesting facets I thought of the trial is Volusia County is a very rural county in Florida. It's only got 500,000 people for the whole county. The judge was kind of a country guy. And the attorney that for the defense was kind of the big city guy. And he was, I don't know how to best to put it, maybe a little bit on the arrogant side. And I don't think that played well. So when you come in and you can, and an expert can list the areas of mistake, if you can list what should have been done, I mean, the second hospital gave a perfect example of what to do. They flew in a neonatal team. And the first hospital had the same agreement in place and could have used the same team and just elected not to do it. And then when you walk in with a child in a wheelchair in front of a bunch of parents who are deciding, it's almost a no-win. To me, and they didn't have it in their protocols, it's the same thing as if you go out on a regular call and somebody wants to refuse. Some things are high-risk refusals, some things are low-risk refusals. This should have been a high risk transfer. They should have called their medical director, got some opinion, make some decisions. I've always tell medics, try to get more fingerprints on the knife before somebody stabs you so that you can point fingers and say, okay, well, my supervisor agreed, the medical director agreed. The only defense that was put up was that they just feel like they didn't do anything wrong. Well, it's hard to claim to a jury when you didn't do anything wrong when the child is sitting there in a wheelchair with the deficits that Addison had. So the jury awarded him $10 million. Originally, the plaintiff only wanted $5 million, which was the max of their insurance. The hospital and the doctor had already settled. When they wouldn't settle, they took him to court and they won a verdict of $10 million. Now, the county of Volusia tried to get involved because if the ambulance company can't afford to pay the $10 million, the county could be held liable for the remainder, which obviously is an impact to the citizens of Volusia County. So they're trying to decide at this point whether they take over EMS and disband the ambulance company altogether. They also tried to go after of capping the judgment to $300,000. In the state of Florida, there are some governmental protections for catastrophic lawsuits. Unfortunately, for the defendant, the judge ruled that that didn't apply in this case, so it kept it at the $10 million. The final settlement that it's not able to appeal at this point is the ambulance company is going to pay the $5 million, and the family's giving them time to pay the other $5 million, possibly suing their own insurance company to get the rest of the money. The reason I wanted to tell this story is that medics have to do the right thing. They have to think about the patient and what is best, as corny as that may sound to folks. But that's what we do. Medics have to be logical thinkers. They have to be willing to say, no, doc, that's not right. I'm not going to do that. What other options could they do? They could have suggested bringing in the critical care team or a neonatal team. They could have stayed there and assisted with the delivery, and once the child was delivered, then transfer the critical care team coming in or a neonatal team coming in for the baby, and they transported mom. All the equipment that was required was found in Burt Fish Hospital's ER. They had the right tubes, they had the right equipment, they had the warmer, and the ER doctor, being a general practitioner, had also taken, as trained to be a pediatrician, just never took his boards. So you went from a hospital that the warmer and the tubes and the equipment and the staff, we leave to go out on the middle of the highway in the back of the ambulance with a paramedic and a student without the equipment that was predictable that they were going to need. In the long run, it's just so critical to use the critical thinking skills that we've learned, anticipate what may happen. I don't think it's a good idea to sit there and always second guess every doctor that you run into, but who knew best of what the capabilities of the ambulance crew? Who knew best of what resources they have and their own skill level? Obviously the crew, the not the doctor. I think he wanted the patient out of his emergency room. It was something he was not comfortable with. However, the hospital settled out of court for about $1.7 million. So if this is helpful for anybody to try to avoid the same mistakes, have a protocol that gives you some options and some direction of what you do, don't be afraid to call medical control. I've had medics who don't like to use med control because people will say, what, you don't have the ability to handle it yourself? Do you need somebody to hold your hand? And that's really not the case here. Having somebody that can be a little bit more objective, that's not there, not being influenced by the physician who's giving you the orders and the direction, is sometimes helpful. It also gives that medic a certain amount of protection that you get the medical director over recorded line telling you to make this transfer happen. You've listed your concerns and why you don't think it's a good idea. It may not help the company from protecting itself, but it sure leaves the medic in pretty solid ground that he or she is trying to do what's best for the patient. Thank you.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSResponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.